Hello, welcome to today's podcast on principles of social media within a business. My name's Sam Holland. I'm the curriculum developer for all the marketing and digital marketing courses brought to you by ACT Training. And today's podcast is going to cover Unit 301 of the Social Media for Business course. So at this point, you should have attended the workshop session to cover this unit, and you should be preparing to go into the assignment for the unit. So by the end of the session and by the end of this podcast, we will have gone through a number of things. So firstly, how social media fits into the marketing of a business, how to select social media tools for your business, how to measure success using social media tools and channels, how social media policy and guidelines can impact the business, how to monitor a business's use of social media, and obviously how to complete the assignment for Unit 301. So generally speaking, this unit gives a nice overview of social media and an introduction to digital marketing itself. By completing this unit, you should have an idea of how to choose the most appropriate social media tools and channels for your marketing, as well as how these tools should be used. This should help you evaluate the current approach in your organisation and should also help you understand how to monitor and evaluate this approach. So, first things first, what is social media? We've got a nice definition here from dictionary.com. Websites and applications that enable users to create and share content or to participate in social networking. I would say that this is also a very effective marketing tool, which allows efficient interaction between businesses and their customers. So the first thing to mention here then is that social media, when we say social media in this whole course that you do in social media for business, this is not simply teaching Facebook. There's a lot more to social media than simply teaching Facebook. And in this context as well, social media is not referring to just Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat. Those would be classed as social networking sites. Social media in this context covers a number of different things, and it's a sort of encompassing term for digital marketing tools and channels, and we'll use social media tools and channels and digital marketing tools and channels interchangeably. So some social media tools and channels that we could discuss are things like, obviously, your company's website. Now that's obviously the first one, that's the place where you want all your customers, all your audience to get to. That's where all your content is. That's where everything is stored. That is your sales point. That's your marketing point. That is where you want your customers to go to. So the company website is obviously really important, potentially the most important one. On top of that, other social media tools and channels that we could refer to are things like your email newsletters, even keywords and search engine optimization, mobile social media, blogs, videos, podcasts. And then obviously you've got all your social networking tools. So that's where we're talking about Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube even. These are social networking tools, and it's important to make that differentiation between social media tools and channels and social networking channels. Social media tools and channels are digital marketing tools. Social networking channels are your Facebooks, your Twitter, and so on. On top of that, some other things to mention in terms of tools and channels, things like blogs, videos, forums, social bookmarks, things like Pinterest, wikis, geolocation even, online vouchers. All of these things are useful social media tools and channels. So some things to consider when, obviously, that's a lot of different tools and channels that you've got to choose from there. So we've got to consider a number of things before we decide which ones we're going to choose. Some of these things include the size and type of the business that you are. The size and type is going to determine what social media tools and channels are going to be the most useful for you and are going to be viable for you. If you're a small business, then maybe it's not viable to say, right, our main point of marketing is going to be YouTube, because you've got to spend the time and the resources and the money then to create those videos regularly and keep putting out that regular content. Maybe it is. Maybe that's something that you do have access to. But knowing the size and the type of business that you're working with is the first thing that you need to consider before you're choosing your social media tools and channels. The next thing is the vision of the business. What's the company's vision? If you're being a social media marketing consultant, then you can often find the business's or the organization's vision statement on their website, which we'll look at shortly in a little bit more depth. Also, the aims and objectives. So what are that organization looking to get out of their marketing? It's very important to keep that in mind at all times, really, when we're doing marketing, making sure that we are adhering to the organization's aims and objectives. Some of the things that we can consider are the brand, the branding of the organization. does the social media tools and channels that we're choosing, do they allow for the branding to be put across appropriately? The values of the organisation, that's something that is becoming very, very important in, you know, the 21st century, 2018, 2019. The values of the organisation is something that people look at. This is something that customers are a lot more savvy to now. So this is something that we need to consider when we're choosing our different social media tools and channels. Do these channels align with the values of the organisation? Some of the things here are resources. Do we have the resources? Do we have the money? Do we have the equipment necessary to consistently use these tools and channels? Audience is a big one. Where are they? Where are your audience? What tools and channels are they using? What tools and channels do they expect you to be using as a customer? That's something that definitely needs to be kept in mind for social media. Content. What sort of content are you going to be putting out? Training. How much training is going to be required for staff? Are all your staff going to be able to have access to these tools and channels? Are there a number of people just within the marketing department maybe who are going to have access to these tools and channels? What training is going to be required? Time scale. How much time can you put towards this? And finally, management support. Do your management support these different tools and channels and support you spending your time and resources on them? That's an important one to consider, and is something that we'll refer back to quite often. Management support is something that is not always present, and generally speaking, if you're on this course, on the Social Media for Business course, then that's a good indicator that your management are supportive of you pursuing these social media marketing activities. So with all that in mind, let's look at a short case study here. And this is something that we went through in the workshop. So it's a short case study on Campbell's Soup. So just to look at, first of all, at the type and the size of the business. Campbell's is obviously a company that makes soup. It makes food. It's a large company founded in 1869 and sold in over 120 different countries. Campbell's employs 17,500 employees worldwide. So obviously it's a large multinational corporation. And it's a company that's always devoted large amounts of resources into marketing. So there we can see the size and the type of the business quite clearly. In terms of the vision of the business, the quote that I found on the website under corporate responsibility, so this is listed on their website, stating their vision succinctly as a corporate entity. Campbell's strives to promote global wellness and nutrition while building a sustainable environment and honouring our role in society from farm to the family. I think that's quite a clear vision. So moving on there, you can identify their values. So also found on their website, it says, "We believe that food should be good, delicious and accessible, all three without compromise." Now, as we'll see now in a second, accessible, I think, is quite an interesting word, because obviously the first thing that it suggests is that it's low cost, so it's affordable. But I believe here that it's also alluding to their rebranding that they're going through, or that they've been going through. And it alludes to their campaign on the non-traditional family, as we'll see shortly. So Campbell's branding has always attempted to portray the company as a cornerstone of family life. And we looked at a few of the old adverts, and there's things like, "Wholesome as they are good. Good things begin to happen when the lady of the house has soup." It's a very traditional marketing to mothers. And this is something that obviously in the 21st century is a little bit more difficult, a little bit less politically correct, I suppose. So enter Umang Shah. So Umang Shah is someone that was hired by Campbell's back in 2014, and he was brought in to bring the brand into the 21st century. During this merger there, Shah was quoted as saying, "Digital marketing is uniquely positioned to help brands reinvent themselves and change hearts and minds along the way." So as Umang Shah is bringing Campbell's through this rebrand, it appears to be trying to broaden its market to a wider audience, which, in my opinion, includes the non-traditional family. As we saw in the workshop, they had a number of adverts, Campbell's, where they, coupled with their slogan, "Made for Real, Real Life," where they're showing their values, they're portraying their values through their advertising here, as they show an advert with two same-sex fathers and their son. Another advert shows a female same-sex couple, and you've got another one there with there was a child in a Spider-Man outfit swinging on the stairs, hanging upside down in the closet, and then at the end they take off the mask and it's a little girl and you expect it to be a little boy. So this is something, they put out a series of adverts really pushing their values, and it appears that they're rallying not only for non-traditional families, but they're rallying for, well, rallying against defined gender roles and things like that. Very of its time. It's an interesting thing for them to do, and I believe that they did it pretty well. The adverts were really good. What's interesting though is that Campbell's kept these videos of the same sex couples specifically away from their social networking profiles. The video of the two dads doesn't even appear on the Campbell's YouTube channel. In my opinion, this could be an attempt to maintain their digital sentiment, which is something that we'll look at in a bit more depth as the session goes on. But obviously, as social media gives people the means to voice their outrage publicly on the page's profile, which has a habit of spreading like wildfire when it starts, it appears to me that Campbell's have attempted to portray their values with some innovative marketing campaigns while simultaneously trying to limit the social media backlash from anti-gay customers, particularly in America. You know, a good example of this recently has been the Gillette advert. The Gillette advert, is this really the best a man can get? And they're talking about, you know, fragile masculinity and things like that. And if you search for that on YouTube, you'll find it on Gillette's YouTube channel, and the comments are overwhelmingly negative. Just looking at it now, the video itself has had 29 million views on YouTube. Of that, they've had 768,000 likes, as opposed to 1.4 million dislikes. So clearly I feel that the advert itself has probably got quite a bit of good sentiment on social media, but the people who are outraged are always the loudest. So what Campbell's have done here is, you know, whether you agree with their methods or not, they've quite shrewdly managed to harness digital marketing and social media to put out some really innovative advertising campaigns, but used social media to back that up and harvest the goodwill from their supporters while limiting the backlash against what is a controversial campaign. So again, for me, morally, this might go against the value that they're trying to portray, but they've successfully limited the inevitable reaction against them. And most of their supporters will think nothing of the fact that the advert in question does not appear on their social media. They probably would never even notice. This is something that I've noticed. This is a conclusion that I've come to because I've done this research. But most casual customers aren't going to do that. Overall, for me, I think this was quite clearly a very successful marketing campaign. If it does sort of weaken the value statement for me a little bit. So moving swiftly on from that, we're going to move on to creating your social media marketing plan. So there's a number of reasons to create the marketing plan in the first place. The first for me is to stay focused on your goals. It's important, as I've mentioned and will continue to mention, staying focused on your goals is the most important part, and the biggest reason to have a plan is so that you know that every single thing that you're doing is contributing towards the goals and objectives of the organization. It's very, very easy to, especially doing social media marketing, to get bogged down in going through comments and responding to comments helpfully or building brand awareness and stuff like that, when the actual campaign that you're trying to do, the actual objective that you're trying to meet, is falling by the wayside because you've become distracted. So having and adhering to a social media marketing plan allows you to make sure that you're always focused on your goals. The next point is it allows you to make informed decisions on the tools and channels that you're using. I think that's fairly self-explanatory. When you're creating your plan, you're going through, you're choosing the different tools and channels that you're doing, and you're making informed decisions because you've done the research there. That's a big part of the plan. Also, it allows you to align your marketing activities with business goals. And obviously, we're staying focused on our goals. Now we're working to actually align what we're doing. We're putting it together. We're putting together our social media marketing activities and making sure that they are aligned with the business's goals. And finally, making sure that you're targeting potential customers. You want to make sure that you're not just shouting into oblivion. You are doing activities on social media that are hitting potential customers. It allows you to outline who those potential customers are, do some basic market segmentation, and understand that what you're doing is being reached by the people that it needs to reach. So some factors to consider when creating the social media marketing plan, and we've been through the first four already here. So that's the type of business, the brand, the values, the tools and channels. What we're going to go and look at going forward now are products and services, customers and audience, content, cost, time and resources. So products and services, first of all, we did, if you remember in the workshop, we've done an activity where we had a look at the three different businesses. So we had a photographer, a food truck and a plumber, and we discussed the sorts of tools and channels that these companies could use, bearing their products and services in mind. So the photographer that we had, things like social networking, company website, blogs, social bookmarks, things like Pinterest. For the food truck, we might have, you know, social networking, obviously, company website, but maybe videos, email newsletters, geolocation. If this food truck's traveling around and they can tag themselves and say, here we are, you know, that's a useful thing for them. Plumber, I always think, is the difficult one because it's not something you see very often on social media, but maybe it should be. Maybe plumbers would benefit from having more of a social media marketing presence. I personally think they would. Again, things like social networking and company websites are a given. But what about things like online vouchers? This is something that could work really well for a plumber, in my opinion. As far as audience goes, and this is something that I do like to drill home, when we're talking about audience, we're not just talking about customers. And it's again, very easy to think of yourselves using social media as just your marketing tool. It's not that. Social networking it's networking. It's a back and forth. So even if you are marketing out to your customers, and that's probably your main goal that most of the time when you're using social media is to market out to your customers, there are other audience groups that are going to hear it and they're going to see it and they're going to interact with it potentially. So we could split audience groups into 5 points. We've got customers. So, you know, we would hope that your customers are viewing your social media marketing, all of your social media marketing, wherever you use it. If you've chosen your tools and channels wisely, then your customers will be interacting with your social media marketing. The next audience group is competitors. Now, competitors will be monitoring your social networks, your websites, and any other marketing activities in order to stay competitive with you, in order to know what you're up to. And vice versa, you should absolutely be doing the same thing. You should be monitoring your competitors' social media and their websites and everything else. The next audience group is influencers. Influencers may not yet be aware of your business, but it's the social media marketer's job to change that. We'll look at influencer marketing a little bit more in the 303 workshop and podcast. Another group is suppliers, and that's a group that you don't necessarily think of, but they, you know, suppliers might just see branded email signatures or, you know, marketing activities when they actually visit the business. But, you know, suppliers are people that you work with, and they're people that are going to see your marketing activities, so it's worth bearing that in mind. Finally, the fifth audience group would be partners. So partners that are working alongside your organization, they might monitor your social media marketing to ensure that the values that you're portraying align with theirs. So again, really important to keep that in mind, that, you know, your social media marketing is not just going out to customers, it's going out with people that you're trying to work with, people that you're trying to align with. So it's always worth keeping that in mind, really. When we look at content, cost, time and resources, now, again, probably preaching to the converted here, but a lot of people, and certainly in my experience, management who are not so aware of social media marketing, consider the social media marketer's job as, well, they send out a tweet every, you know, three times a day, whatever that is. You know, successful social media marketing requires a little bit more than that. It requires regular content creation, which can take up more time and resources than some people might expect. So, you know, that goes from coming up with the idea in the first place and researching that content, making sure that you're informed and that you're not putting out any false information, to then actually planning what you're going to deliver and how you're going to achieve your objectives, how it aligns with the business's objectives. The planning is a big part of content creation. You know, but planning the generation, planning the delivery even. The generation itself then, to actually, you know, generating the content for your social media marketing, maybe it is just 280 characters in a tweet. Maybe it is just a Facebook status where you're embedding a URL. But it probably shouldn't always be that. You know, there's a need for you to create good, interesting, dynamic content, videos, images, rich media, things like that. This is the sort of stuff that keeps your audience involved and keeps them excited about what you're doing. And the final step, I guess, in content creation is the delivery. You know, you've got to actually deliver it through the most useful and efficient social media tools and channels. You've got to make sure that you're delivering it to your audience and that it all looks how you expect it to look. Then you've got to monitor it. You've got to monitor and evaluate that just to make sure that it's working, or to see if it's working. And if it's not working, then maybe you can identify some changes to make in the future. So, you know, that's in terms of just creating content, that's a lot of steps there. So it's important to be realistic on your abilities and resources when creating your social media marketing plan. So to conclude this point then, the components of the social media marketing plan are as follows. First, you've got to define your product and service. That's step one. Make sure that you know what your product and service is, and make sure that you define that clearly in the beginning of your social media marketing plan. The next step is to describe your business, describe the brand, describe the values, describe the mission statements, anything like that, any pertinent information about your business that is going to have some effect on your social media marketing activities. Research your competition. Make sure that you know who you're competing with. Make sure that you know what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. What their unique selling points are. You need to know as much information about your competition, because it will inform how you conduct your marketing. The next step would be to identify your customers. You look through your customer base. You try and do a little bit of market segmentation there. The next step then is to know your goals, know what you actually want to achieve. That's the first step there, in pinpointing each of the steps that you need to take in order to achieve those goals. And finally then, it's important to track and measure them, which we'll look at in a second now. But by this point, you should have completed your social media marketing planning document that's been assigned to you by your assessor. So that document will go through each of these steps in a little bit more depth there. It will firstly allow you to define your product and service. It will then give you space to describe the business, the brand, and the values. There's a space there for you to input any research that you've done on your competition. It'll give you a little bit of space there to identify your customers and do an initial part of your market segmentation. It'll put out some areas for you to point out your goals and pinpoint what you want to achieve. And then it'll allow you to pinpoint each of those steps that you need to take in order to achieve those goals. So let's have a look at tracking and measuring your outcomes. So why is it important to measure success in the first place? The first point is obviously it's to ensure that your marketing is reaching your audience. It's to ensure that you're not wasting your time and again, shouting into the void. It's again to ensure that you're not wasting time and resources, to ensure that you're not spending money where you don't need to, or to ensure that you're not wasting time creating videos and where all of your audience is actually on Facebook and they're not watching them. It's also helpful to ensure that your objectives are being met. So when you're tracking and measuring these outcomes and you're putting together regular evaluation arrangements, it allows you to keep track before deadline date and to see how on track you are. You know, if your objective is to increase engagement on social media, then you can keep tracking that. That's something that you can keep looking into and see where your marketing activities are working for you and where they're not. Which follows then, it allows you to see where improvements could be made. If things aren't working for you, it allows you to see why. So step one in making sure that you're able to track and measure these outcomes is by ensuring that you're setting smarter targets. This is something that we went through in the assignment, in the workshop. So smarter targets are obviously an acronym, and it stands for specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, time-based, evaluate, and reevaluate. So specific, we'll make sure that the goal is clearly defined. Measurable is, you know, it's possible to put a value on the goal. We can put a numerical number on that goal, so we can measure it. Attainable, we can agree when the task will have been done, and we can see here that it's possible to do it in that time period. Relevant, the task makes sense to the overall marketing and business plans. It's relevant to your overall business goals and objectives. Timely, there is enough time to do these tasks and there is a clear end to the goal. Evaluate, this is the point where you evaluate the outcomes of your task, you see what's worked and what hasn't, and then reevaluate it. You're reevaluating the whole target to ensure that they're smart before starting again. So there's a number of tools that we can use to measure and track. Obviously, on social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter, you've got in-house analytics software. Facebook Insights, you know, with the amount of data that Facebook collects on its users, Facebook Insights is one of the best tools out there to create a full customer profile for your demographic. Twitter Analytics, while obviously not as targeted as Facebook, Twitter Analytics offers a much broader insight on your posts and the content you create and the reach or amplification or engagement of your tweets. Another one, and probably the most widely used web analytics tool on the internet, is Google Analytics. Google Analytics provides an incredible amount of information on web traffic, as well as how effective your SEO is. It's going to look at things like bounce rates and so on, which, again, we'll look at in a bit more depth in the session and podcast on Unit 302. All of these tools are free to use, but Google Analytics has an option to upgrade to the premium version for more features. But even the standalone version, even the free version of Google Analytics, is an incredibly powerful piece of software. So thinking about smarter targets, we looked at a case study on a local music festival in Cardiff called Hub Festival. Hub Festival is, again, it's a small local music festival in Cardiff city centre on Womanby Street. It's a number of independent music venues all get together, and you're allowed entry to all the venues on one street on one ticket. A very small grassroots event, but lots of fun. So Hub Festival is something that I was lucky enough to work with myself. So when I was working with them back in 2017, we had an objective to boost engagement on Facebook throughout the month of August. The festival itself fell on the August bank holiday weekend, so we wanted to boost engagement. We wanted to make sure that people were interacting with our page more often, more frequently, in the lead up to the festival. So throughout the month of August, we wanted more and more engagement on social media. Obviously, this objective here, boost engagement on Facebook throughout August, is not a smart objective. So how do we make that smart? Well, we changed that then to boost engagement on Facebook by 100% in the month of August by using targeted content released in conjunction with peak activity times. Obviously, that's a bit of a mouthful, but that is a smarter target there. And we can see that because it's specific, boost engagement on Facebook. That's a specific goal that we're looking for. It's measurable, boost engagement on Facebook by 100%. It's achievable. We've said how we're going to achieve it. We're going to be using targeted content released in conjunction with peak activity times. It's relevant. We've already identified that boost engagement will increase visibility on their social media during the event, which is the overall goal. That's their overall goal to achieve. And timely, it's in August. We want to boost it throughout the month of August. So there we have a smart target there. And I think that's clear that makes a lot more sense. And even though the target may be a little bit of a mouthful, you can see clearly what you're looking for and how we're going to do it. And that's the key to smarter targets there. We then had a little look at a screenshot of the analytics for the event, and we could see that we were successful. In fact, post engagement boosted by 201% throughout the month of August, which is pretty good, and was pretty good. Pretty happy with that. So the problem that we had, though, was that we could see the spikes during the build-up to the event where marketing activities were frequent and obviously of interest to the page's followers, so they were more engaging. So it's expected that engagement would rise a little bit, but 201% is over and above what we were hoping for, so that was good. The amount of engagements on the page's call to action buttons also saw that spike. In fact, actions on the page, page views, page previews, page likes, reach, they all spiked in that time period. The same pattern is seen roughly on all of the graphs, showing that the social media strategy during the event was well done. However, there were significant drops immediately after the event, which is, again, on one hand, that is to be expected, but where we're evaluating and re-evaluating our smarter targets, this is something that we can look at. Could we have done anything about that drop? Could we have continued putting out content after the event? Maybe we put early bird tickets on sale immediately after the event. Maybe we do competition. We ask people to send in photos they've taken, things like that. That's a conversation that the marketing team were able to have, having looked at our smarter target and re-evaluating it. So we know, right, next year we can aim for 300% increase in engagement, because we know we can hit 200. So let's aim for 300 and let's do the following things to improve. And that's the benefit there of smarter targets. So moving on then, we started to look then at social media policy and guidelines. So social media policy and guidelines are obviously they're a document that offers guidance to employees using social media, and that covers both at home and in the workplace. It's intended to preempt any issues with the company's reputation due to employee misuse of social media. Now, the social media policy and guidelines is a document that if it doesn't exist, then it definitely should. And that's something that a lot of social media marketers are often tasked with creating. If you're not tasked with creating it, then that's something that, in my recommendation, is something that you should take on your own back and create it regardless. It's a good experience to have. It's a good bit of experience to put on your CV that you've created social media policy and guidelines and implemented them. So the guidelines, well, they can be split between business profiles and personal profiles. They should be split between those two things, because they do cover employees' personal social media activities as well. With the business profiles, we can look at social media. If we think of social media in terms of, it's not just marketing. Social media is a Frankenstein of sales, marketing, and customer service. And this means that it's even more important than ever that employees using the business's social media profiles are aware of these guidelines and have received training on how to use them. We've all seen organizations get social media wrong, sometimes in incredible style. Having a social media policy and guidelines is the first step in avoiding that for your organization. So it should cover, first of all, it should cover training requirements. So what training are people going to need before they have access to their social media profiles? It should also link to the corporate code of practice. Obviously, this should give more generic information on staff conduct, both on and offline. The corporate code of practice is a good indication of how employees should be interacting on social media. Tone and manner as well. The guidelines should contain information on tone and manner. Is your business's profile formal or is it informal? What personality do you want your business profile to put across? That's an important thing to note in your policy and guidelines. The complaints process is incredibly important to note, especially as social media profiles now act sometimes even primarily as customer service. The operator of the business profile must know how to deal with complaints, because it's likely to be a big part of their job role. And finally, crisis management and reputation management. These are things that we're going to look at in a lot more depth shortly now, but crisis and reputation management are possibly one of the most important parts of the social media policy and guidelines. It's a way of protecting yourself from the crisis that is almost inevitable when working online. As far as guidelines for staff using their personal profiles, this should cover information on the internet and email. What's allowed in your workplace? Is using social media allowed? What about personal emails? What guidelines are there to using the internet appropriately in your workplace that people have to adhere to? Behaviour in and out of work, that should be another point. Obviously, your digital footprint is a representation of the company that you work for. You might be reprimanded for inappropriate use of social media, even on your personal profiles. It's important to note that if your social media profiles, any of your social media profiles, Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is, if there's any mention at all that you are linked to your employer, then your employers can see your personal profile legally as a company profile. You have opted to represent yourself in that way, but you are representing your organization because it says under employer you work for ACT Training or whoever it is. So it's very important to note that, and it's something that all employees should be aware of, really, that they are representing their organization even on their personal profiles if it's visible. Appropriate use is another point that needs to be covered. So guidelines on how employees can behave appropriately when using the internet or social media. So not what you shouldn't do, the way you should act, the way that you should conduct yourselves. This could follow with a code of conduct, which might be formally written guidelines for users to follow. And finally, and again, one of the most important things to include here is online privacy. How do you ensure that any data held by you or the company is kept private and secure? And what are the reasons for that? Often these things will work a lot better if the employees know why they're being asked to conduct themselves in this way. So looking at crisis and reputation management then, the potential downside of being able to engage and interact with your audience is that they are obviously also able to engage and interact with you. Customers now have unprecedented access to your organisation and they expect a prompt response to any queries or complaints. So if a customer posts something negative on social media about your organisation, it's imperative that you respond and deal with that complaint quickly and satisfactorily for the customer. Taking your eye off the ball with social media can have severe consequences to an organisation, as this negativity can spread like wildfire. Again, as I'm sure you can name a million examples of organisations getting it wrong. So, what does reputation management entail? It's managing your online reputation is a primary function of the frontline social media team. Reputation management entails monitoring social media for brand mentions. And there's tools that you can use to do that, things like Google Alerts and stuff like that. TweetScan, that's another one. They allow you to monitor social media and the internet for any brand mentions so that you can quickly see any negativity or any positivity that you can then amplify throughout your own social media tools and channels. Another function of crisis and reputation management is quickly responding to comments, queries and complaints, making sure that you are interacting. It's a two-way conversation with your audience, and whether that's positive or negative, that's something that allows you to maintain a healthy relationship there and a healthy reputation. Amplifying positive posts about the brand and responding helpfully to negative posts about the brand. And obviously there's no true one way of dealing with negative posts. It's something that's got to be taken on a case-by-case basis, but we'll look at a few methods of dealing with that as we go forward. So some reasons to have a crisis management policy is obviously, firstly, it allows you to deal with any problems before they become too serious. A problem ignored on social media is not always, but potentially something that can spiral out of control, and then all of a sudden you've lost control of the narrative and your brand's reputation has plummeted. So it allows you to manage your online perception and reputation and stop negativity spiraling out of control. We looked at the example of Greggs, where some pranksters changed the image on Google with a disparaging comment about the quality of Greggs food, let's say, and even the quality of their customers. Greggs' social media team are brilliant at dealing with this sort of crisis, and they are very good at turning it on its head and making it into a joke. And what they did in this circumstance is that they sent a public tweet out to Google with a picture of some really nice looking donuts and said, "Hey Google, fix this problem and they're yours. #FixGreggs." Google came straight back to them, said, "Sorry, we're on it. Throw in a sausage roll and we'll get it done." And Greggs came back then and wrote out Google in sausage rolls, put an image out of that. And that became the overwhelming story, rather than the quite nasty prank that was played on him. The way that they dealt with it and the humour that they brought out of it became the overwhelming story. I remember BuzzFeed picking up on it, and it was that went viral. It was the quality of their social media team that went viral, not the joke that was played on them. Another example here was that we looked at was British Airways. There was a screenshot British Airways responding to a customer saying, "Sorry for the delay in responding. Our Twitter feed is open from 9 to 5 GMT. Please direct message your baggage reference and we'll look into this." And the Twitter user came back to them at British Airways, "How does a $1 billion corporation only have 9 to 5 social media support for a business that operates 24/7? DM me yourselves." So this Twitter user publicly shamed them for their lack of awareness on how social media should be used. And the tweet later went viral. This is a poorly thought out reputation management plan. And BA had to later bring in the crisis team in order to dampen the flames that were caused. This caused a negative perception switch online for BA, which could have been easily avoided. So particularly for larger businesses, the customer's expectation is that their social media should deal with sales, marketing and customer support. So I think, as the Twitter user rightly pointed out, a billion-dollar corporation that operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is only paying someone for social media support for 9 to 5 GMT. That's unacceptable. That's not a way that that organization should do business. And I guarantee you that's not how they're doing it anymore. So how should BA have approached this customer in order to avoid a digital crisis and perception switch? One company that knows the importance of happy customers is Disney. And Disney's solution to bringing quality customer service to even the angriest customers is called HEARD, H-E-A-R-D. And it's another lovely acronym. You know how much I enjoy an acronym. So HEARD, H, hear, listen to the customer's entire story. Listen to them. Don't just pretend. Don't just give them the brush off. Listen to what they're trying to say to you. And E, empathize. Empathize. Use phrases that convey that you understand how the customer feels. A, apologize, and do so effusively. Make sure that you are apologizing and you're being genuine about it. If you've cocked up, then you need to apologize. If you haven't cocked up, but that's the perception of the customer, then bite your lip and apologize. Resolve, fix the issue. And if you don't know how, ask the customer, how can I set this right for you? And then finally, D, diagnose. Get to the bottom of the issue so that you can make sure it won't happen again. Now, if I'm putting a complaint into a company and they listen to me, they hear me out, they empathize, they apologize quickly and, you know, genuinely, they then resolve the issue and make sure that it doesn't happen again, I'm walking away a happy customer. I'm not slagging off British Airways at that point. I'm happy. I'm happy with what they've told me. So that's a couple of things there on reputation management. But before we get to crisis and reputation management, we should be looking at managing perception changes of the business. And we're looking at the different types of perceptions. So there's you know, obviously customers can have a negative perception of you. They can have a positive perception of you. But there's in between that, there's neutral, there's negative neutral, there's positive neutral. Obviously, the aim is always to move it towards the positive. So what are the benefits of managing perception changes? First of all, helps you to understand how people perceive your business or your product or your service. That's an important point to make from step one. It's understanding how people currently perceive you allows you to make changes if you need to. Managing perception changes can also allow you to preempt any negative shifts in perception or company reputation. It allows you to understand why your business is being perceived in this way, and it allows you to understand what you can do to change or strengthen your business's perception. There's some tools that we can use to do that. We looked in the workshop at a tool called Social Mention. Social Mention is a social media search and analysis platform that aggregates user-generated content from across the universe into a single stream of information. It allows you to track and measure what people are saying about you, your company, your new product, or any topic across the web social media landscape in real time. It monitors over 100 different social media properties directly, including Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google, and so on. Now, Social Mention does have its limitations. It's definitely quite American-centric. And obviously, if you're a small business or a small brand, then it's going to be less useful. But it can be helpful to look at your competition. It can be helpful to look at your industry, things like that. It's a good tool to use, but it's important to understand its limitations. So I do recommend that you spend a bit of time playing with it. It's www.socialmention.com. So when we're managing perception changes, like Umang Shah said, digital marketing is uniquely positioned to help brands reinvent themselves and change hearts and minds along the way. So how's it done? We can, firstly, making a good impression is step one. We can do that in a number of ways. There's things like behavior matching, so using the same style of writing as the perceiver, as the customer. That helps them think more highly of you. Self-promotion, presenting your organization or your product or your service in a positive light will help the perceiver agree with the perception that you're trying to portray. Conforming to situational norms, acting in an acceptable way for your customer. Appreciating others, treating the customer in a considerate way. There's ways of influencing ongoing perception, which are things like preparation. Have clear goals and know how you want to be perceived. Prepare for that. coordination, ensure that everybody knows and agrees with the perception that you're trying to reach. Make sure that everybody is singing off the same hymn sheet, if you like. Clarity, ensure communication is clear so that the customer can easily see the values that you're portraying. And credibility, and that's probably the most important one for me, is credibility. Ensure that all communication is consistent and honest. Inconsistency breeds disbelief. Honesty is something, is the minimum expectation of how brands operate on social media. Marketers immediately have a bad reputation. Marketing is for years now has been synonymous with lying or bending the truth. Social media does not allow for that. Social media is designed for honesty. It's designed for honest interaction. And customers are savvy. Your audience is savvy to that. They know when you're lying. They can see it. So it's important to be credible, to be honest. So moving on then, we looked at monitoring your competition. So monitoring your competition is a hugely important part of the social media marketer's job. For a number of reasons. First of all, it allows you to identify who your competition are. By monitoring them, it allows you to identify who they are and how much competition they actually are. It also allows you to identify their strengths and their weaknesses. If they're particularly strong in a certain area, then maybe you can match that, maybe you can follow their lead. Or maybe you avoid it. If you know that that's where they're strong, then maybe you concentrate on a different area. With their weaknesses, you can avoid the pitfalls that they're falling into, or you can capitalize on their weaknesses. And if you know that you do that area better than them, then you do that area better than them and you shout about it. It also allows you to discover new ideas. If they're being successful in a certain area, if they're doing a particular marketing campaign and you can see that it's successful for them, then maybe you can copy that. Maybe you can put your own spin on it. And also you can see how effective their chosen tools and channels are. Maybe your competition are using tools and channels that you're not. Are they seeing success from that? If so, maybe you should be jumping in on that as well. So what can you learn by monitoring your competition? You can learn what your customers like about them. You can see what they're doing right and what the customers are reacting to. You can also see the key complaints from those customers. You can see what they're regularly complaining about. Again, is that something that you can capitalize? Is that something that you can preempt? If you're walking into the same marketplace, can you preempt those complaints and make sure that you don't get them? On what are they focusing their marketing efforts? What are they using? Not just tools and channels, what products, what services? What are they focusing their marketing efforts on? That's important information to know. How effective are the tools and channels that they're using? Some of them may be using them really well and they're just not getting a lot of engagement back. That's indicative then that the tool or channel is probably not worthwhile. But it's only an indication. You know, you can never be sure of these things. How much engagement do they get? How much interaction are they getting? How much amplification are they getting from their audience? And finally, who are their influencers? Now, who are interacting with their brand or in their industry and seeing a lot of success from it? Like, you know, this is important stuff to know because this is something that you can then go away and utilize. So in order to monitor how your competition's using social media, there's a number of different tools that you can use, which I'll go through in very brief. But so one is SEMrush. SEMrush allows you to track the keyword position of your competitors. Moz Open Site Explorer. This allows you to analyze the backlink profile of a website. BuzzSumo. This allows you to measure the social shares of competitors' posts. SE Ranking. This allows you to monitor competitors' search results on Google and on other search engines. And finally, Simply Measured. Simply Measured allows you to gather information about competitors' branding strategy. So SEMrush, again, is something that we'll look at in a little bit more depth in Unit 302. So that's about it, really, for this podcast. So this should allow you to walk into the assignment with your memory jogged a little bit. And I think this is all important information to know at the very beginning of your marketing journey, really, using social media and digital marketing tools. By going through each of these steps, I think you've got a good head start on most organizations in creating their social media marketing plan and putting out your social media marketing activities. So with that being said, diolch yn fawr, pob lwc, and we'll see you next time.